Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Let the breath carry you inward to the core of your being, the center of your being. To the Sufis, we call this your very soul, your heart. The Buddhists call it the heart, the mind. Some people say consciousness. It doesn't matter. It is the core of our very being. There's a beautiful Buddhist teaching that asks a series of questions that help us to find and define that essence that we're seeking. Leo, it's okay. So again, there are a series of questions and then some answers. What is the nature of mind like? Imagine a sky, empty, spacious, and pure from the beginning. Its essence is like this. Imagine a sun, luminous, clear, unobstructed, and spontaneously present. Its nature is like this. Imagine that sun shining out impartially on us and all things, penetrating all directions. Its energy, which is the manifestation of compassion, is like this. Nothing can obstruct it, and it pervades everywhere. So this is a beautiful passage to begin with, and I have a few more short readings because it helps us to get another glimpse of how to approach these trainings of the ego. And today's subject is humility, humility. And Murshid has some beautiful things to tell us about that, and also some things to caution us about. But if we think that in the core of each being, no matter what the illusion of the outward appearance or the shape that an individual's life takes, we are all these things. We are like the sky that is empty and spacious and pure. And we are like the sun that is luminous, clear, unobstructed, and spontaneous. And we are like that sun shining in all directions. But what is it that prevents us from knowing that all the time? It's one little word. Does anyone have that word?
Ego.
Yes, it is. It is. It's this false reality that we're constantly identifying with, instead of the true essence of who we are. It's simple in words, but it's the ultimate goal that we're all searching for. Let's look at it another way, from another perspective. This is the master Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks. The title of this poem is Be Melting Snow. Totally unconscious and apropos of nothing, you come to see me. Is someone here, I ask? The moon, the full moon, is inside your house. My friends and I go running out into the street. I'm in here, comes a voice from the house, but we aren't listening. We're looking up at the sky. My pet nightingale sighs like a drunk in the garden. Ring doves scatter with small cries. Where? Where? It's midnight. The whole neighborhood is up and out in the street thinking. The cat burglar has come back. The actual thief is there too, saying out loud, yes, the cat burglar is somewhere in this crowd. No one pays attention. Lo, I am with you always. Means, when you look for God, God is in the look of your eyes. In the thought of looking nearer to you than yourself, or things that have happened to you, there's no need to go outside. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. A white flower grows in quietness. Let your tongue become that flower. So let's sit with the breath for just a few moments. It's as if the sun of our own luminosity and the warmth of that melts the ego. Be melting snow. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. Be melting snow. Those little snowmen that we, and snow women and snow people that we build when we're children, and it's just white snow that we build up, and we give it a form, and then we identify it with these characteristics that we apply to it. And all of a sudden, it appears to be something. but we've made it out of nothing. And then what happens when the warmth of the sun begins to melt it? It eventually goes back into the snow and then dissolves into water and is absorbed by the earth, be melting snow. I'd be willing to think that all of us here, or those that are listening, have this sense and can recall at some point in their lives where there is that rigidity that we have with our identity that comes up against someone or something. And that is usually a point of painfulness for us when we cling to that fixed identity, become inflexible. So let's think about that as we're listening to these teachings on humility. And let's try to really understand the full implications of what Murshid is trying to explain with that word humility. I think it is we can be fooled, but let's put it in context. If you'll give me a moment, I'm going to just turn my attention to the computer. I don't seem to have a pop-up window, and if anyone's trying to communicate, I want you to know that I can't see anything right now, and here we go. All right, if someone could just test and send a chat to me, please, so that I see if the window's working properly, I would appreciate it. Someone online? Hello, anyone out there? Yes, thank you. So now we know that we have contact there also. So if you allow me, I'd also like to share a beautiful writing that Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan sent today to us to begin our class and to contemplate. And I will post this online for us to, along with the outline of the teaching. Murshid Hidayat says, "We all know that striving in this difficult life requires one to be something. Consequently, one assumes that to be also applies to spirituality. But spirituality does not have any meaning unless one discovers that pretending to be something only leads to discouragement." Like that snowman who might think they're a real person out there, but they can't move about, and of course as soon as the sun melts it, it's nothing again, which is a good thing to be. Jace, you can learn from that snowman. Murshid Hidayat goes on to say, "When making the first humble step on the path of spirituality, one realizes that spirituality means identifying oneself with the all-pervading." Different words, but same meaning as the first teaching. Space, essence, nature, all-pervading. Therefore, humility does not mean losing one's personality, but rather gaining in brilliancy. Again, here's that word, that sun, that luminous quality. Humility does not mean losing one's personality, but rather gaining in brilliancy. The light in an electric globe is not just only inside the globe, it also radiates as far as its brilliancy reaches. The light in an electric globe is not just only inside the globe, it also radiates as far as its brilliancy reaches. The secret of humility is to discover one's own inner brilliancy without trying to find it elsewhere, and to keep that secret to oneself. The secret of humility is to discover one's own inner brilliancy without trying to find it elsewhere, and to keep that secret to oneself. And he signed it just simply, Hadayat. Let your light so shine before all men. Let your light so shine before all men.
Isn't that just the opposite? I thought he said keep it a secret, don't let anyone know.
Well, I think he meant actually don't keep this idea of, you know, some people I think get the sense, Diane, that they know something and that they will keep it from others. You know, it's paradoxical, and Mirshad Hidayat often puts things in a way that you have to, maybe we'll have to wrestle with it. There's a dual meaning there. Keep it a secret, but at the same time, in the previous line, didn't he say, the light in an electric globe is not just only inside the globe.
Sure.
Right? He says, it also radiates as far as its brilliancy reaches. So in a way, it's in our being, in our manner, in the radiance, our radiance. You know, the American-born Sufi master, Mirshad Samuel Lewis, I believe it was him, so someone will correct me if I'm misquoting, but he said, I will know them by the light in their eyes. And it's interesting, I always think about that when I'm traveling and someone that I don't know is going to pick me up at the airport and I don't know what they look like. I'm always looking for this quality of light in someone's eyes, and inevitably, it's the person you just know. You can just see it, you recognize it. It just happens. I mean, mostly I'm speaking now of Sufi. For me, Sufi contacts
genius
when I'm traveling.
Genius speaks to genius. You just automatically know.
God willing.
Okay.
Yeah. And hopefully genius speaks to all. Yes? Yeah. So, shall we go on? So this is on Gathas on Moral Culture. We are on the second grouping of teachings, number 8, Training of the Ego, Humility. Humility Humility is the principal thing that must be learned in the path of ego, of training the ego. Again, humility is the principal thing that must be learned in the path of training the ego. Come on, Leo. You come and lay down, honey. It is the constant effort of effacing the ego that prepares man for the greater journey. This principle of humility can be practiced by forgetting one's personality in every thought and action and in every dealing with another. The principle of humility can be practiced by forgetting one's personality in every thought and action, and in every dealing with another. No doubt, it is difficult and may not seem very practical in everyday life, though in the end, it will prove to be the successful way, not only in one's spiritual life, but in one's everyday affairs. Shall I read that again? It's very rich here in terms of content, and there's a lot for us to contemplate. And again, I think we often have this sense of what it is to have humility, to express humility. But here, Murshid is defining it as thus. Humility is the principal thing that must be learned in the path of training the ego. The principal thing, he says. It is the constant effort of effacing the ego that prepares man for the greater journey. And I will say here, if someone is new and listening to this, you might want to find Sufi Message Volume Number 1, The Way of Illumination. And there, early on in the book, Murshid talks about the object of the journey. And this is about the path of initiation. And he describes taking up that path and how one does that. So the greater journey is this journey that we are on towards finding unity, towards discovering this divine essence. This principle of humility can be practiced by forgetting one's personality in every thought and action and in every dealing with another. No doubt it is difficult and may not seem very practical in everyday life, though in the end it will serve to be the successful way, not only in one's spiritual life, but in one's everyday affairs. The general tendency is to bring one's personality forward, which builds a wall between two souls whose destiny and happiness lies in unity. In business, in profession, in all aspects of life, it is necessary that one should unite with the other in this unity, in which the purpose of life is fulfilled. I really could recommend that people go back over this month and read just this one paragraph of this teaching. It's almost, you know, it's to me, there are koans here. I mean, you know, and it is really not an easy task that Murshid's putting before us. I think the other thing is the paradox of knowing that sometimes we do have to bring the personality forward. That's absolutely what's being called for. And I think that there's a beauty in Murshid's teachings, because in another place he may talk all about that. Here he's talking about effacing that and not using that. So, you know, to be a really good student and to understand the breadth and the depth of the Sufi message, which I've always maintained is more a message for social and personal liberty than rather than even a spiritual path. But it is this developing this kind of independent thinking that is free from conditioning in all way. And in a way, that's what he's asking us to do here. It's very interesting and very full. Now, I wanted to turn for a moment just to maybe highlight this, and this is just the first paragraph of this teaching, and then we'll get to a practice in a few moments. But there's this reading from the mysticism of sound that has to do with harmony and the keynote, because Murshid talks about one should unite with the other in unity, in which the purpose of life is fulfilled. So let's turn to that teaching, because it may help to illuminate even more the essence of what Murshid is trying to give us in this first paragraph of this teaching on humility. And again, this is on the mysticism of sound from Sufi Message Volume 2, Number 3, Harmony, the Keynote. The keynote is always in harmony with each note. For it has all notes of the scale within it. In the same way, the Sufi harmonizes with everybody, whether good or bad, wise or foolish, by becoming like the keynote. All races, nations, classes, and people are like a strain of music based upon one chord. When the keynote, the common interest, holds so many personalities in a single bond of harmony. By a study of life, the Sufi learns and practices the nature of its harmony. Shall I read that sentence again? Yeah, I think so. All races, nations, classes, and people are like a strain of music based upon one chord. When the keynote, the common interest, holds so many personalities in a single bond of harmony. By a study of life, the Sufi learns and practices the nature of its harmony. The Sufi establishes harmony within the self, with others, with the universe, and with the infinite. The Sufi identifies with another. He sees oneself, so to speak, in every other being. The Sufi cares for neither blame nor praise, considering both as coming from within. If a person were to drop a heavy weight, and in doing so hurt his own foot, he would not blame his hand for having dropped it, realizing himself in both the hand and the foot. In like manner, the Sufi is tolerant when harmed by another, thinking that the harm has come from himself. Now, I think we want to be careful here, because we know that there are people that are, have been violated or subject to criminal acts, and we're not saying, Murshid's not saying, if something like that happened to you, you blame yourself. I mean, from a karmic point of view, a Buddhist might, but we're not doing that here. I mean, we're not saying to self-blame or excuse certain behaviors, and certainly later in the teaching, Murshid will be very clear about that. He's talking that on the one hand, that's weakness. That's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about being a doormat or being a... tolerating the intolerable. I mean, how could ever we have social reform? If Gandhi did, how would have India ever been free and independent? But you notice that he did it by finding the places where he agreed, and by, a kind of integrity in the resistance. It wasn't an aggressive resistance. So we have great models in the world that can give us a larger context for what Murshid is identifying here. He uses counterpoint, again, the Sufi uses counterpoint like music, in blending the undesirable talk of a friend and making it into a fugue. The Sufi uses counterpoint by blending the undesirable talk of a friend and making it into a fugue. He overlooks the fault of others, considering that they know better. He hides the faults of others and suppresses any facts that would cause disharmony. This constant battle is with the ego, the root of disharmony and the only enemy of man. By crushing this enemy, man gives mastery over himself. This wins for him mastery over the whole universe, because the wall standing between the self and the Almighty has been broken down. Gentleness, mildness, respect, humility, modesty, self-denial, conscientiousness, tolerance, and forgiveness are considered by the Sufi as the attributes which produce harmony within one's own soul as well as within that of another. Arrogance, wrath, vice, attachment, greed, and jealousy are the six principal sources of disharmony. The ego, the only creator of disharmony, becomes more powerful the more it is gratified, the more it is pleased. For the time being, it shows its satisfaction at having gratified its demands. But soon after, it demands still more until life becomes a burden. The wise detect this enemy as the instigator of all mischief. But everybody else blames another for his misfortunes in life. Comments or any questions? Anyone that's joining us online that would like to say anything can use the chat window. Oh, it's not necessary. Okay, we can move on. We can move on. Yeah, it's okay. You know, it's a lot to absorb, I think. And there are certain parts of it that we probably all can have perfect agreement with. And there are parts of it that maybe we question, or we're perhaps evaluating our own behavior and thought formations and patterns. And perhaps we're even thinking about another person or someone that we know very well within this context. And I think it's not something, you know, I don't think these teachings are something that we can listen to once and completely grasp, absorb, and apply. I think it's lifelong study. And I think that that's the same is true with all the great teachings, which are ultimately one and the same with different words in different context. I think the goal is the same. So I have something here. Yes, it is really hard to be wise in this way. But and I agree with you. Thank you for that comment. I think that maybe I can put it in this context. I'm trying to find a really good metaphor, because the more I study these teachings, the more they have an impact on me. And those that know me very well know that I'm a very energetic person. I'm a very expressive person. I'm a very can-do kind of person. Sometimes that rubs against people. You know, they don't want to go at a certain pace. They want to go at their pace, or they may have a reservation about taking up a new direction, or they may, you know, maybe they feel they're being pushed somehow. I mean, this is in all aspects of life, one can see this. And when Murshid says, let things come naturally, you know, see about harmonizing, it's interesting. It's like as if the knots start to unravel without us needing to make a lot of effort. Joe and I have even been talking about this, about how when challenges arise, you know, changing our perspective and seeing them as maybe the universe trying to bring us in harmony with something that we're resisting. It's like really getting a different view of things and removing one's self determination or attachment, one could say, maybe one's attachment to certain outcomes. And we know there's many great stories, there's many great tales about be careful what you wish for, because you may get it. You know, the very thing that we end up acquiring is the very thing that can sometimes destroy us. So we want to be mindful of that. We don't know it in the quest, but in the end, we can see that sometimes that happens. Yeah. I'm going to ask you, Joe, I'm having a little bit of blurred vision right now. Which one of these is for divide? Is it this one? On the left. Thank you.